coming down to the 16th bowl. Catholic Boy is pulling away. He's so impressive today, the others didn't even have a prayer. Catholic Boy rolls in the run. Happy Travers.
Live from the backstretch at historic Saratoga Racecourse, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow. Race the Leah Auto Group. To search their inventory, schedule a service appointment, or find a dealership near you, visit leahcars.com. Leah Cars for life.
Good morning. Welcome to the Wednesday edition of Racing Across America. I'm Seth Merrill. Thanks for joining us live from our Saratoga set. You know, I meant to say when Mike was in here, and I didn't. Somebody asked me the other day, because we have the two box now where we're kind of next to each other, and somebody said, man, are you guys sitting next to each other? No, we aren't. His chair is, like, I have my arm out here, and I'm still 4 feet away from his chair. The two box makes it look like we're kind of right next to each other, but we are socially distanced here on the set. And I thought, when somebody asked me that the other day, I thought, yeah, maybe we should remind people of that. If you watched the show the first couple of days, we were using the two shot, but we were kind of both hanging off the side of the screen. We're so far apart. But then we had, technologically, we moved us a little bit closer, but only technologically. And in physical distance, we are socially distanced here on the set. You don't have to worry about that. All right, there we go. And Mike's chair is, you can't even see his chair on the in that shot. It's so far over. Today on the show, we'll be joined a little bit later on by Tom Law. It's our typical Wednesday visit from Tom Law from the Saratoga Special. He'll also give you some thoughts on the two steeplechases, the one coming up today and the one tomorrow. A little bit later on, I thought, you know what, we haven't talked to Ken Weingartner in a while from the USTA, United States Trotting Association. But last Saturday was the Hambo, the Hamiltonian. So I thought, hey, let's recap the Hamiltonian with Ken and also kind of catch up on where the harness game has been over the past few months and where we're going the rest of the year. So Ken Weingartner from the USTA will join us via Zoom a little bit later on as well. But top of the show, again, I think we've aired one, maybe two of the Gary Contessa interviews. And Gary's doing some work for us this summer, going out and about to interview some racing personalities, and happy to have him on board to do that. And this latest interview, he caught up with Richard Migliori, the Mig, and got some background from him. So let's fire it up right now. Gary Contessa and Richard Migliori.
Contessa with capital OTP, practicing social distancing with Richard Migliori. We just measured off 6 feet. And I'm really happy to have Richard here today because I know Richard since I'm new in the game. He and I came in at about the same time. And Richard's story is one of the most interesting stories of all. So I'm going to turn this over to Rich. Rich, tell us about coming up in New York, the trials and tribulations of making it through your apprentice season, and then the hardest step. And we see so many jockeys fail at this, the transition from apprentice jockey to journeyman. Tell us a little bit about
it. Well, it is a very tough transition, but I was very fortunate. I hooked on with Steve DeMauro, senior, who put me under contract when I was 14 years old. And they really groomed me to be a rider. And by the time I was 16, I was probably ready to ride for 6 months already. And they started me, and I had an exceptional apprentice year in 1981. Was leading rider in New York for the year as an apprentice, which, you know, you think about, it wasn't that far removed from when I was galloping horses, watching guys like Angel Cordero, George Velasquez, and now I'm competing with them. So I had a wonderful bug year. Actually lost my apprentice allowance when I was in Tokyo, Japan, to ride the very first Japan Cup. I finished third on the very one. Came back to New York. And things kind of kept rolling along. The original plan was for me to stay in New York for the winter. And then Steve wanted me to come to Florida to ride the horses. So I went to Florida and wound up hitting that post-apprentice slump that everybody talks about. You know, a lot of people that ride you because you do get the incentive of 5 pounds off. Well, suddenly, you know, you don't have as much experience as some of the guys. And you think about the jockey's room back then, Gary, as you know. Angel Cordero, George Velasquez, Jacinto Vasquez, Eddie Maple. I mean, just one Hall of Famer after another. I wound up buying my contract in April of 82. So that kind of also spiraled. Now I lost the support of that main stable. Felt like I needed to kind of freelance, though, get out on my own a little bit. And I struggled. I struggled mightily for 2 years. 82 and 83 were slow. 83 was slower than 82. I think what happens, too, is a lot of guys don't hang in there. And it was maybe a little bit easier for me to hang in there because I'm from New York. I wasn't like, you know, a lot of guys come here from other places, and if they're not doing good, they get homesick and they go, well, I'll just go home. I was home, so I was going to dig in, and I toyed with the idea of going to a couple of different places to try to kickstart my career. But at the end of the day, I was home, and I kept seeing light at the end of the tunnel. I was working. I'm a true believer in you have to look at the man in the mirror. And what was I doing to create that success, or what wasn't I doing that I should be doing to create that success? And I just started hitting the barn area, you know, 5:30 every morning, and I decided, I don't know when I'm going to get the opportunity, but I'm going to do everything I can to make it happen, and I'm going to be ready for the opportunity when it comes. And that's really all you can do. You can't make someone ride you, but when you get that shot, you got to make the most of it. And 84, I started picking up. And middle of 84, had a pretty good Saratoga. Mark Cassie was training in New York then. I was riding all his horses. And a horse named Wild Again came open in the Meadowlands Cup. He needed a rider. It was grade one on Labor Day. And that was when we used to be out of here by Labor Day, out of Saratoga. And my agent called Vincent Timpany, the trainer of Wild Again. And he said, you know, this kid's riding good. You might want to keep an eye on him. He says, well, I'll watch him ride today. Does he have many mounts today? I think I was on four or five horses. Well, I won three that day and the stake. I won the Boojum on a horse named Tarant Tara for Pete Ferriola. And I won three. He called up my agent and says, he can ride Wild Again. I have to ride the first race for Mark Cassie, a good filly named Kamikaze Rick. She won off the screen.
Remember her well.
Yeah, good, very fast filly. Oh, yes. Jumped in the helicopter, go over the Meadowlands. He goes wire to wire, win a $500,000 grade one, first man. And that's what kind of uplifted me. And I was leading rider in 81, and then 85, I was leading rider again as a journeyman. You know, so it was a big deal. But again, I think what happens is a lot of guys don't hang in there through that tough part. And maybe in some respects it was easier for me because, again, I was home.
Right. And, you know, many jockeys over the years have come to me and said, Gary, you know, I'm going to lose my bug. What do you suggest? And so many of them, when they lose the bug, they think they need to go to Parks or Penn National or Laurel and restart as a journeyman. In my opinion, that hurts you because those people didn't have that luxury of you being a bug. They don't know anything about you, and now suddenly you're going to launch a journeyman career in another track. I think that's probably the common denominator to failure, is to leave where you made your bones and where you made your roots.
And it's just so hard to get back to, you know, you're in New York. That's where you want to be. New York or California at that time were the two places that basically were the major league circuits. If you leave, how do you get back? And that was something that I always thought about. If I leave, though, how am I going to get back here? And I just decided I was going to dig in and work. And
so,
it paid off.
Amazing. Wild Again, great racehorse, went on to a good stud career. Yep. Also made Richard Migliori, which even I didn't know. Because let's face it, you win your first grade one, people notice. People notice you on what you do in this game. Nobody knows who ran second in the Kentucky Derby because people only take note of who won. And so that horse made your journeyman career, at least jump-started it. And now your career is starting to really pick up. Tell us some of your most memorable moments as a journeyman. I think I know there's been many, and there's been many in my team, even my horses. But tell me your most memorable times.
Well, you know, it's interesting because Wild Again really did put me in a different light in trainers' eyes. And I started picking up some really nice horses. I picked up a horse named Wynn, first New York bred to ever earn $1 million. And Paul Kornman, who owned him, saw me win the Meadowlands Cup, and he formulated this idea that I'd be a good fit for Wynn. So I won the Man O' War on him, beat Cozine right here in Saratoga in the Bernard Baruch. Picked up a horse late in the winter at Aqueduct, named Eternal Prince. Now, you gotta understand, I grew up in Brooklyn, about 12 miles from Aqueduct. My whole life going to the track with my father, I would go to that wind picture wall, the Wood Memorial wind pictures, since I'm a little kid, and just study them, and I could tell you all the winners and the great riders. So I pick up this horse, Eternal Prince. He wins the Gotham. He wins the Wood Memorial. And I'm 20 years old now. I just won the Wood Memorial. And I'm walking in the winner's circle, and it struck me that I was going to be on that wall that I've stared at since I'm 8 years old. And I actually got emotional about it because it was like a big deal. You know, I'm a New York guy. The Wood Memorial is a big deal, especially then. You know, it was a grade one. So, you know, those are the kind of memories that stand out to me, things that happened that had more meaning to me because of being a native New Yorker.
Right. I never passed that wall without studying it. And at Belmont, the Belmont wall, I find it amazing. The people that are in the pictures, the people that are, you know, gravitate to those races. And it was just an amazing thing. And I've done the same thing as you. Study those pictures because it's just an incredible thing.
Well, it's part of our history. And I really believe that if we don't embrace our history, we're not going to make our future as good as it can be. You know, our game is so great. And a lot of it is because of the history of it. You feel it in Saratoga. It's easy to feel it here. You know, the Racing Museum and Hall of Fame across the street, this incredible facility. You know, I used to come here a lot in the off season and feel the ghosts of racing past. You know, it's we're really fortunate. You know, I think anybody that's been a lifelong racetracker like us, you're a bit of a romantic. You know, so you embrace these kind of historical ideals, if you will.
We do. We do. And getting back to Wynn, was that Sally Bailey?
It was Sally Bailey.
And that was an amazing situation because back then we didn't have very many women in this game.
No.
And Sally Bailey brought that horse, won a ton of stake races, and amazingly with you.
And well, what was interesting too, though, is she was very fair and she sold half the horse to Paul Corman. He had controlling interest, but she still trained him. And Tony Grail had been riding the horse. And as a two-year-old, he was a rogue. I mean, really bad actor, very bad in the gate. He was always kind of bad in the gate, but nobody really wanted to ride him. And then he hit the turf, and he started running these lights-out races. He ran second to John Henry. And Paul Corman wanted to put me on the horse. And Sally, and rightfully so, said, wait, this guy's been riding the horse when no one wanted to ride him. Now he's a good horse. Now you want to, you know, and she didn't want to change. And basically, Paul held her feet to the fire. And now I've got to go out and work the horse, and she's not happy. I mean, she won't even hardly talk to me. And then I go to ride him the first time, and it was an allowance race, mile and 3/8 on the grass, coming off a layoff, because she was incredible that way. She could get a horse ready off a long layoff.
Yes, I remember.
Layoff.
She was.
And she said to me, don't make too much use of my horse. You win by as little as possible. So now you're riding a horse that's 1-9 in an allowance race, right? And you got to measure it. And he was a tricky horse because he'd pull up. So you couldn't, like, be overconfident because he'd put his toes in the ground. And I wound up winning by a length. And believe me, my stomach was in knots, right? But he won easy by a length. Came up here, won the Bernard Baruch. And I was fighting for lead and rider that meet here. And I shut Robbie Davis off. And I did it on purpose, and I deserved the days. He tried to come through a spot, and I slammed the gate. And so that morning, everybody's like, you got to appeal. You can't take your days. You know, you and Angel are fighting for leading rider. And I go by Sally's barn, big mistake. And she said, I saw what you did yesterday. You're going to get days. She said, if you appeal those days and can't ride this horse in the fall, you'll never ride him again. So now I go to the stewards and they say, well, we got to give you days. And that's weighing on me. My agent said, we're a little light the last week. I talked to Ron Turcott that morning, who I idolized. Joe Shea had been my first agent, had been Ron's agent his whole career. And he said, well, do you deserve the days? And I said, yeah. He goes, so what's the question? You got to take them. So I have all this. And the steward said, okay, you're going to appeal, right? And they handed me the paper to sign. I said, no, I'm taking them. And they were in shock. And we were tied 14 winners apiece when it was a 24-day meet with 6 racing days left. I go out that afternoon. I win 4. Angel gets shut out. I'm winning 18-14 with 5 racing days left, and I can't ride because I can't now appeal. He beat me one winner.
That's unbelievable. Yeah. And there was another year where you almost beat Angel Cordero as well, and you got sidelined with an injury.
That was as an apprentice. I'd have been the only apprentice to win up here. And I got hurt. It was an interesting circumstance. It was the last Saturday, so we got Saturday, Sunday, Monday. I'm on 8 races Saturday, Gary. And I said, my worst mount is the first race. That horse wins and pays $60-some-odd. So now we're tied, me and Angel, like 20 wins apiece. The second race, George Velasquez fell. And Before Dawn was the favorite in the spinaway for Calumet. And Georgie went to the hospital, and John Veach comes in and he goes, put the kid on the horse. I just picked up Before Dawn in the spinaway, you know, as an apprentice, a grade one. I go out in the third race on Creme de la Fete, crashed at the top of the stretch, woke up in the hospital a couple hours later. What happened? Don't know where I am. And 5 of the horses I was named on, including Before Dawn, won over the next couple of days while I was in Saratoga Hospital. Angel eked me out by 1.
Unbelievable. And you say Creme de la Fete. I trained Creme de la Fete. Frank Martin trained Creme de la Fete. Yeah. He won. He's one of the most amazing horses ever. He won races for 11 different trainers.
It's Cannon Royal between horses. Here comes Spy Game. 4 of them across the track. Spy Game now takes the lead. Storm Warrior and Creme de la Fete on the far outside. Creme de la Fete gains the lead.
I won 16 races on that horse.
Wow.
You know, from the time I was an apprentice through my journey, he was something else.
That horse outlasted a lot of people in this game.
He certainly
was. He was amazing. One thing, I know that your career came to an end because of injuries, and I don't think our audience understands what a dangerous, dangerous business this can be. Do you want to touch on that a little bit?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, one thing you accept as a rider, and it is a dangerous game. It's not if you're going to get hurt, it's when and how bad. And my first really bad injury, like jockeys break collarbones, it's not even a big deal. You know, you're out a month and you get back on the horse. But my first real bad injury, I broke my neck the first time in 1988, which they actually did a Rescue 911 episode on. You can go to YouTube and put in Iron Jockey and that whole thing comes up.
In horse racing, the stakes are so high, you often have to dare to risk it all to dare to be great. On May 30th, 1988, 9 races were scheduled at Belmont Park Raceway in New York, featuring top jockeys from around the country.
And they really didn't think I was ever going to walk again. And I spent a month and a half in LIJ, Long Island Jewish Hospital, and then a month and a half in a rehabilitation hospital learning to walk again, and then rode 3.5 months after that and got back right in it. When you're young, you think you're indestructible. You're like, well, it didn't faze me really. And then flash forward, I had several other bad injuries, notably snapped my forearm at Belmont. I went down, a horse stepped on me. And I had 3 surgeries, still have 2 plates, 16 screws in my arm. But then the one that ended my career, I broke my neck again. And because I had the surgery previous and it was all fused, the x-rays were misread because I split right down the fusion, the middle of the fusion. I actually went back to riding and I was in agony. And the last day I rode, I had 5 mounts. I won with 4 of them. Couldn't drive myself home. My son had to drive me home. My wife took me to Mount Sinai Hospital that Monday. We got an appointment with Andrew Hecht, spinal specialist. And he did all the images, and he works for the NFL and the NHL. And come in my office. He goes, I see what's wrong with you. I got a pinched nerve, right? He goes, no, you got 8 broken vertebrae. He says, you got 6 in your neck, 2 in your back. And I'm stunned. My wife starts crying. I said, well, doc, I've been riding like this. I ride a really good filly Saturday in Chicago named Life at 10. I just won that affectionately on her. She's easy to ride. You put her on the lead. I'll go ride her, and then I'll come back and check in. You can do the surgery. You're not leaving here today. He says, this thing's going to go. It's going to go like a light switch. He goes, your body's telling you everything's breaking down. You're going to be a quadriplegic. They put me in a collar, put me in a wheelchair, wheeled me across to the hospital section, checked me in. Had the surgery 3 days later, and that was the career.
Wow.
No big surprise why we're here. My career as a jockey is over, not by choice. in the doctor's office, Dr. Heck's office, on Wednesday of last week. He assured me that I would never ride another thoroughbred again.
You've rebounded once again, and you're a personality working for Fox, working for NYRA, handicapper. I mean, jack of all trades. I see you at the Fazek Tipton sales. I mean, we really appreciate having you on that team.
Well, I appreciate that, and I'm blessed. I've gotten great opportunities. The day I went to Belmont and announced my retirement, it kind of really hit me in the face, because from the time you're 12, you're dreaming of doing something and working towards it. By the time you're 16, you're doing it. Now you're 44 and it's over. And it really hit me, like, who am I now? And obviously, most important roles in life, father, husband. But when you've done this your entire adult life, I really kind of had that thought, who am I now? I don't even know who I am anymore. And I got home and I was feeling pretty down about it. And before I left the track, Charlie Haywood grabbed me and said, you really spoke very well up there. And I didn't have notes. I just talked from the heart. He says, when you feel better, call me. He says, I want you on our team. So that was already one positive reinforcement. I get home, Amy Zimmerman calls me from HRTV. We think you'd be good on TV. I'm like, why? Like, I don't know why. And they wound up hiring me, and I went to work for HRTV, and then I went to work for NYRA, and I was able to do both. And again, just wonderful opportunities. And one thing about me, and you're very similar, we love this game. We're passionate about it. And I think if you bring that passion, whatever you do, it's going to shine through.
I agree. And I really appreciate you bringing that passion to this interview, because this has been great. And it's nice to get a little insight into your life. And we jammed about 30 years of Richard Migliori into the last 15 minutes. So I really appreciate that.
Thank you, Gary.
Gary Contessa with Capital OTB with Richard Migliori. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did.
No track, no problem. There's no better place to follow the Saratoga race meet than Capital OTB and OTB TV. With our live TV shows from the Saratoga backstretch and our live remotes, all the information you need is right here. Each and every day of the Saratoga meet, we talk with all the top trainers, jockeys, handicappers, and racing personalities. So stay with Capital OTB and OTB TV this racing season and win more.
It. Watch me. I got it. Hey! I got something that makes me want to shout. I got something that tells me what it's all about. I got a move that tells me what to do. If you don't, brothers and sisters, then you won't know what it's all about.
Welcome back to Racing Across America on this Wednesday morning. Thanks for our man, Gary Contessa, and Richard Migliori, and our real man, Mick Richards, in the control room, or in the studio control room. He was out there doing the socially distanced shooting and edited piece together as well. So a nice profile of our buddy Richard Migliori. But our buddy Tom Law now joins us live, as he does every Wednesday. Talk a little steeplechase and more. Tom, good morning.
Morning, Seth. How are you today?
Very good. Happy to have you on board to, as I say, talk a little bit about maybe the past weekend, but also look at the jump races that are coming up today and tomorrow. And when you sat down, we were kind of talking a little bit about the Saratoga special and number of issues you put out and whatnot. And again, we'll remind people again, digital version only Wednesdays and Saturdays. That means a new edition out this morning.
That's right. Yeah. Issue number 9 of 16.
Number 9. Yeah. If you're a Beatles fan.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And
so, it's rolling right along. I feel like somebody said to me today, you're kind of going downhill now. And I said, well, there's still a long ways to go. I mean, obviously, we're halfway after today.
Halfway point.
But good issue today. We recapped all the Travers weekend stuff. Didn't take a huge look ahead, unfortunately. We kind of missed a little bit there. But such a big weekend last weekend. We needed to sort of recap it properly. And we caught up with a lot of the connections sort of after the races. It's one of the benefits we have of doing the Wednesday, Saturday, is that we can do a lot of follow-ups, talk to breeders, talk to the people that sold Gamine as a two-year-old. Joe kind of was at the sale when she sold the first time and talked to the guy. The partners that sold her then caught up with them again 2 days ago. It was pretty cool. So, of course, Tis the Law feature and American Sailor. We got into his story getting claimed at Suffolk, and he's run at like 22 tracks or something in his career, which is totally crazy.
The first stakes win, first Saratoga win for the trainer,
for Wayne Potts, who's come up the hard way, mucking stalls. And in the story, it talked about him getting a job mucking stalls, and then he was promoted to hot walker. And I thought, wow. the hot walker is usually the lowest guy, you would think, but he found a lower rung, and he's come all the way up. I mean, graded stakes at Saratoga, pretty awesome.
You could tell from his comments, he was quite enthusiastic about it, as you could imagine with a guy like that working his way up and getting a graded stakes win. Got it via the DQ, but he said, I'll take it.
Yeah, for sure. Our kind of story. You know, those are the kind of stories we love to do. Typical meet, we'd be out there in the morning probably talking to him and getting his whole story. But we were able to do it after the fact, which was nice. So there was quite a bit of angles in there. One of our writers, Paul Halloran. He's a guy from Boston area that's used to cover racing at Suffolk Downs. Actually found a Suffolk Downs connection. He quite often will uncover these New England connections that he has. And he was a great help for me this weekend. Obviously, as you know, it was a big day, a big weekend, and tough to do it on the ground here by myself with sort of limited staff and Sean and Joe kind of working remotely from home.
We talk every week also about the handicapping side of things. You can find those selections every day, and you'll want to look, obviously. This is horseracing.com. Also, you type Saratoga Special into Google, you can find it that way. But you and I were comparing notes. I'm thinking I'm having a pretty good season, 64. You're at 64 wins, but your man Chapasian?
71.
Yikes!
Like you said, this is like a career year for me. I mean, knock on wood, we're 64 wins, not quite halfway through. That's pretty good. I remember sort of in the old days, maybe it was more of the 6 week meet or whatever. I would think 100. I was like, if you can get to 100, that's pretty good.
I'm right with you.
Yeah, I was 109 last year. So I'm like, well, that was really good. 64 was pretty solid, but yet we're down 7. Chapazian just clicking right along. He had 8 on Travers Day, and like you said, you had 8 and DQ'd out of in Primus for 9. 8 is strong. I mean, I had like 5 or 6, and I thought, that's pretty good. And then I look at John, and he's just clicking right along.
Yeah, I'm thinking with the 8-win day, and I thought it was a pretty good week overall, but I am losing ground as Chapazian moves ahead. And again, you can find the selections every day at the website. Obviously, in the digital print version, the PDF version, Wednesdays and Saturdays, but online as well. Well, we kind of alluded to it, but I'd love to have your thoughts on a couple of weekend races. We'll pull up the stretch run to the Travers and Tis the Law, and it's just that day being there and talking to people, down in the winner's circle area and up in the press box area, and then subsequently, I think this was a wow performance. I mean, you get some of these performances during the year from various runners in the various divisions, but this three-year-old division, he was already at the head of the class, hadn't quite given one of these performances that maybe had people sit back and go, he's the one, but he's the one.
Absolutely. I mean, talk about just galloping away from the field, and Todd Pletcher said it best. I talked to him the next day, and somebody asked him about what he thought of Tis the Law, and he made a comment. He says he's a very hard horse to beat because he just gallops. He's got such a high cruising speed, and then he re-breaks at the end, just like as you saw. I mean, draws away at the end and runs fast. I mean, 2 minutes and under 2:01, 2:95. Not many 2:00s on the ledger of mound of quarters here at Saratoga, and of course, And I've been running the Travers for 150 years. They run the Alabama at the mile and a quarter. I used to run a lot of races at that distance way back when. Just truly amazing performance. I called it the best performance of his career. Small sample, I guess, but this is a horse that has won all but one of his starts, and Florida Derby, Champaign, Belmont Stakes, now Travers. Pretty good resume. hard to find a chink in the armor, to be honest with you. I think a lot's going to be made about how he lost to Churchill Downs, but anybody that has any sense at all would watch that race and see that he just barely lost. It wasn't like he just totally threw in a dismal performance like a Hansel or a Holy Bull or something like that, where he just, ran terrible. No, he had an genuine excuse in there. Had some kind of funky trips a little bit, but Manny Franco is in his groove right now and riding this horse very, very well. Sean Clancy actually talked to Manny today for his cup of coffee column. It's just great stuff. Like, I didn't do a ton of Manny in my story because I knew Sean was going to talk to him, and just had some great insight into it, and just, amazing performance. I mean, like I wrote, it was the one thing that one of many things we're really missing here at Saratoga this year is sort of obviously the fans, but I miss the appreciation that the fans have for the horses. Yes. when they come back, and that was a performance that just would have gotten, like, I feel chilled right now just sort of talking about it, of what that maybe would have been like. It was kind of cool. There was a group of fans kind of off Nelson Ave, and I was kind of like, all right, I know they're not supposed to be there and whatever, but you know what? It's the Travers, and this is the place where fans appreciate the game, appreciate a great performance like that, and the horse was very deserving of that, and his connections were deserving of that, and, even the horses beaten in the field were deserving of it. The runner-up and the third horse ran well, no shame in getting beat by Tis the Law, for sure.
Yeah, a performance like that where it's kind of geared down the last 16th of a mile, as you say. You break 201 up here for the mile and a quarter. It doesn't happen very often. He puts himself in rarefied air,
yeah.
A 108 buyer, and you get a mile and a quarter before trying the mile and a quarter in the Derby and validate that that's not going to be a problem, clearly. I mean, he now moves into that Derby in good form, and easy to root for. Jack Knowlton and the Sakatoga folks, and certainly Barkley Tag,
yeah,
who a veteran trainer, fun to see him as well. All of that, which maybe overshadows a little another great performance on Saturday. We'll watch the stretch run of the test with Gamine.
Mm.
And again, as I say, Tis the Law was so eye-popping that this one is maybe getting overlooked a touch, but she was phenomenal as well. I mean, we had two superstar performances on Saturday.
If you count it, she's been now overlooked twice. Belmont Stakes Day, she runs a 132 and change in the Acorn and wins by, a country mile. Here again, and that's Venetian Harbor, that's second.
Yeah.
That's a quality filly.
Yeah.
Real quality. 108 and change. To open up daylight like that, sub 121. As I said, Joe Clancy talked to the guys that sold her as a two-year-old, $1.8 million in at the Timonium sale last May. Just truly amazing performance. Anxious to see what happens next with her.
Yeah.
I think they've mentioned the Kentucky Oaks, which it could be quite a race. She went two turns before, a little bit tested by a nice filly that Mike McCarthy has, Speech, who's come back and run well. And,
yes.
And the three-year-old filly division's pretty strong as well,
yeah,
this year.
And we'll see more of them coming up on Saturday in the Alabama. And that,
yeah,
Swiss Skydivers scheduled there, right?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Kenny McPeak is here, and she's here. She's nice. You think about what she's done. Coast to coast, shipping, should have no problem. Mile and a quarter in the Alabama. Good test for her, for sure.
Yeah, it's going to be fun to see how that three-year-old filly division does shake out. Because, again, with those horses, as you mentioned, Speech, Swiss Skydiver, and Alchemine. Mm-hmm. And if all of them show up in the Kentucky Oaks, it's going to be that'll be a fun Friday leading into the Saturday. First Saturday in September, as it were, a Kentucky
yeah.
Derby. All right, let's get some thoughts. Because, again, every Wednesday when we have you in here, we talk a little bit on the jump side of things. And a couple of intriguing jump races this week.
Mm-hmm.
Tomorrow we have one that was rescheduled from last week due to weather. But today it's allowance non-winners of two lifetime runners. And I am going to pull up the Middleburg race from June 13th. And we're going to look at Zoom Zoom Zoe for my man Jonathan Shepard. And when we pick it up, Zoom Zoom Zoe will be way back. It's hard to believe Lear Avia loses this. I mean, earlier she was ahead by probably about 30, but here she's ahead by still a pretty good margin. But as we see him come down the stretch, Zoom Zoom Zoe will reel in the leader and win off by 5. And off of that one, and on the jump side of things with a feathery 140 on board, I'm going to go with Zoom Zoom Zoe this afternoon. What are your thoughts on the opener?
Well, it certainly gets in light. I mean, this is a filly going against the boys in here. So maybe she, like you said, she does get in a little bit light. And just a truly amazing performance. Maybe the leader, fell apart here at the end of the race, for sure. A little bit, yeah. I think that the chart lines are pretty funny to read. Now, if you look at this course, this is a much different setup than they're going to have here. However, I mean, you're talking about a long gaps in between jumps here, which is what we also have here at Saratoga. We run, there's a jump on the backstretch the last time around, and then a good half mile to the finish. Yeah. So you want to sort of look at horses maybe that have good flat form, and really factor that into your handicapping. So, you know, Zoom Zoom Zoe certainly one for one, hard to knock her in there. For the jumps, for me though, I got to start with Jack Fisher.
Sure.
He's won obviously the three jump races that we've run so far. We should have had four. We had to reschedule one. That's tomorrow. The handicap race that goes tomorrow, rescheduled with the same field. Jack brings Brian Bakes Cookies in here. It's kind of a, you know, odd name for a horse, but, you know, hey, whatever.
This is a horse that ran a story.
Yeah.
If the horse wins, that can be in the paper. You can look exactly. You can get the story behind.
Got to get the name, that. Right? Yeah, for sure. Horse ran for, like, Michelle Nevin, Des Farrell, Christophe Clement, John Toscano, Linda Rice. Ran on the flat up here. Actually ran a couple of years ago on the flat. Ran in a maiden race against Patterson Cross and Bala Rocks, two horses that end up being pretty useful grass horses for Bill Mott. Of course, that was way back in 2016, but he's got some decent flat form, and he comes out of a pretty good race. He ran the Galway Kid, who I feel like we've been mentioning a lot, in the run-up in these races. I mean, you know, we've been talking about him a lot. I hope he pans out and does pretty good. He's kind of a horse I've been using in my handicapping a lot. But Jack likes him, and he liked that first race, too. Jack's other horse in here, he's got the 6, Prayer Hope. He's a horse that he really thought he would win that flat race. He comes out of a flat race at Laurel. He was 6-5. Yeah. He ran off in the race, though, and Jack was like, I don't really know where that came from. He completely ran off. He says he doesn't do any of that at home. I don't really know where that came from. He says, you know, he probably fixed him up and hopefully get him to settle a little bit more in here. He's kind of like Fast Car, the horse that Jack has that was a very expensive yearling that's transitioned into a steeplechase career. He was actually a $700,000 yearling at one time. So Jack typically has a lot of horses like this. He's not my second pick. I actually picked Anticipating in here. He's another horse that was a little bit sharp in his first race here. He led on the 29th, which is also how he won his only jump race, kind of up close and in it. I did like the fact that he was there. He was still there at the end. Like, everybody that was kind of close to the pace with him, Whitman's Poetry, a few other horses, I mean, they totally dropped out the back. This horse showed some good fortitude to hang in there for second behind Fast Car, who was just very impressive. Now, Global Freedom was third, excuse me. Global Freedom was in the race. He was second in that race and ran really well. He's in here, too, coupled with Mark Hahn. He's kind of that entry's probably going to end up being the favorite in here, which I totally have left off my super.
I left him off, too.
Yeah.
I mean, I think this is a fairly contentious race. I have the two you mentioned, Brian Baked Cookie and Anticipating, right underneath. I did not use Prayer or Hope, but the one jump race is very good. And it is kind of interesting that, you know, went off as the favorite in the flat race a few weeks ago down at Laurel.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a fun race this afternoon.
Yeah. Plus, he gets Mikey Mitchell. That's Jack's kind of go-to guy. Another horse to look at, I think, is Fearsome. He's a horse that has good flat form as well. Ran second in the Valedictory, which is a
I put that one down in the fourth spot, and when we talked about that on the handicapping show this morning, I said, I might regret that, because, you know, comes out of a couple of flat stakes races, which I find kind of intriguing.
Absolutely, and Cyril Murphy, Irv Naylor, they kind of team up. They've done well over the years with horses like this that they've shopped around and bought, and transition to jumpers. I mean, Cyril does an amazing job. Typically in the spring, you know, you'll see Cyril and Irv Naylor winning lots of races throughout the season, obviously a junkated season.
Isn't Irv typically like the leading owner?
He's been leading owner many, many times over the years, yes. And it's funny that Jack Fisher's like unstoppable here. There's been six other jump races since we started ours here at Colonial Downs. Jack hasn't won any of them. Shepard's won a couple. Shepard's won three of them. Jack had horses in four of the six. Now these are maidens, and you know, for fillies and mares, they also ran some straight maiden special weights. So the races here are maybe a little bit higher class. So Jack typically has horses that fit Saratoga a little bit better, maybe, than some of the maidens.
Let's turn to tomorrow, which, again, I think today's race is a lot of fun. Tomorrow's race is just weird. Because you look at the PPs, it is a 9-horse field with an entry. So 8 separate betting interests, but 9 horses.
Yeah.
5 of the 9 were pulled up last time. 3 more were beaten by 12, 16, and 30 lengths. That leaves one other horse who won his last race.
Yeah.
I had to go with Elucidation off the win, and we're going to pull up the replay there, going back to Great Meadow down in Virginia on June 27th. We will watch Elucidation get it done pretty nicely in there. Was in with that feathery 140. That was a bonus. But the 148 today, I don't think is a big ask. So watch late and look for the green silks to be making the late move as we get closer to the finish line for Irv Naylor, but I put Elucidation on top, just again in a field where there is some back class, but boy, the last races from everybody else leaves a little bit to be desired. So just coming up with the exact is going to be tough for me.
Yeah,
here.
Certainly a lot of questions in this one. This was the rescheduled race from last week. Same exact field. When the entries came out, I started looking at it and I thought to myself, this is a different group, but it's not.
I love this drone shot.
Isn't this great? This drone stuff has been amazing.
Yeah, it is.
From what I understand, and I'm not sure that I should reveal this, just because I don't want to make somebody look bad, but apparently at one of the meets they had a crash with the drone.
Well, that would be the reason that you don't see it as much as you would like to.
But what a great addition to the sport. I was watching those races at home, and I was like, this,
really,
I
got
to have this, right? I
mean,
as you can see in those meets, they're not really at the racetrack type setting, so you might have an accident with the drone. You might have it here with the trees that we have out in the infield, but if they got close enough, that drone can get pretty high.
Yeah.
Pretty cool, but I went with, again, I'm broken record here, maybe. I lean toward a new member, which is Jack Fisher's horse. Didn't finish in his last race, pulled up, but his form is good. His form is good here at Saratoga. He hadn't run in a while, in almost 2 years. I'm confident that Jack wouldn't be running him here if he didn't feel like he was fit and ready for this spot. You know, Mikey Mitchell is his main man. Iranistan is also in here. He's a horse for Jonathan Shepard that they had high hopes on, and he ran very, very well early on in his jumping career. It's kind of tailed off a little bit lately, but I'm willing to give him another shot. He's another one. I mean, a lot of them trailed and pulled up, so I mean, a lot of them have been that. So you got to kind of lean towards maybe which ones had done something before. And a little bit of a price, I actually picked. I like Show Court. He's a horse that's run well, fresh, run well off the layoff, and run well here at Saratoga for Arch Kingsley. He won the Kaiser a couple years ago, and off the bench and ran very, very well with that flat form setup. He's a horse that he's been running a long, long time. He's run 45 times, but he's coming off the layoff, hadn't run since last November, so it could be a price too.
Arch, a former jump jockey himself.
That's right.
Tom, as always, appreciate the visit. Again, we will tell people to visit thisishorseracing.com to get the latest edition of the Saratoga Special. Again, digital edition now coming out Wednesdays and Saturdays with a lot of great Saratoga info as usual. Appreciate the visit. We'll talk again.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. See you soon.
Happy to do it. Tom Law from the Saratoga Special. We will take a break, and when we come back, we will be joined by Ken Weingartner from the USTA, United States Trotting Association. We'll do a little handball recap and more on the sulky side right after this. Stay tuned.
Nice.
Where's the best place to find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing? Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you, where's the best sports bar in the capital region, tell them Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
No matter where in the world you are, the excitement of wagering on horse racing is just a click away. You'll get live streaming, past performances, race replays, our virtual tote board, analysis and selections from professional handicappers, a simple, safe, and secure wagering platform, and best of all, you get track prices. CapitalOTBBet.com. Bet any place, anytime at CapitalOTBBet.com. And be sure to download our new mobile app from the iTunes Store or Google Play.
Thank you. I think what you guys are doing is awesome.
You're doing a great job. Keep that game rolling.
Seth, you do a great job too. So thank you, and I appreciate you having me on, and I appreciate watching your show every day.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. As promised before the break, a little sulky talk. Now, Hambo was last weekend, so I thought we'd reach out to Ken Weingartner from the USTA and talk a little bit about the Hambo and recap, and maybe get caught up a little bit on the sulky season so far this year and what we have to look forward to going ahead. Ken, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Very good. Happy to have you on board to talk a little bit about the harness side, as I know we have a lot of fans out in the audience that enjoy the harness racing, as do I. And one of the big days was last weekend at the Meadowlands. And so why don't we jump right in and talk a little bit about the Hambletonian last week. A nice field lined up, but the lady beats the boys. Ramona Hill gets it done as an overwhelming favorite and makes a big move on the backstretch, a big sweeping move. And as the short price, you thought, oh, she's showing her stuff now, and certainly she does as she takes the lead. We're watching them come into the stretch here, and really doesn't have much of a challenge in the stretch. Ramona Hill looking really good in the Hambletonian.
She has been fantastic. Her last three races are about as good three races you could string together. capped off by the win in the Hamiltonian. She was really, really sharp, just as her connections expected her to be. They were pointing towards this race. When she won the Dell Miller two starts earlier, that was from post 10, and that really gave them an indication that she was ready to go. And then she won her elimination coming from last place in an 8-horse field. She was three wide around the final turn, came home in less than 26 seconds for a final quarter to win that race, and it was just all systems go.
150-1 the final time, and as you say, career record now, 9 wins and 11 starts, so she's a very special filly, to be sure. And I saw the press release that was sent out yesterday or the day before, one of the last couple of days, talking to Andrew McCarthy, and he certainly seemed very enthusiastic about the Hamiltonian win.
Yeah, he everybody was. It's, you know, the dream race for everybody. Some of the connections of this horse, the owners, they've been racing at the Meadowlands since it opened. And to win that race at that track is very special to them. Andy, this was his second final, and you know, he got it done with Pomona Hill. He had the utmost confidence in her. He said that, you know, he wanted to just kind of see how things went in the first turn, and it didn't matter if they were going to go to the lead or come from off the pace. He was confident he could win it anyway the race played out.
And it was interesting. I had Tom Law from the Saratoga Special in the segment before. And as I introduced you going into the break and then we went into the commercial, he said, oh, you're talking about the Hamiltonian. He said, Ramona Hill, part of that ownership group owned the nice thoroughbred a couple of years ago, Chancelot, the Crawfords. And so there was a nice little crossover there. Always fun to see the owners who play in both sides of the game.
Yeah, and the Crawfords, they have their firm is you know, in upstate New York, not far from Syracuse, and they bred Ramona Hill.
Nice.
So, you know, a nice little bonus there to have bred a Hamiltonian winner as well as co-own it.
And you mentioned the eliminations last week. For folks certainly my age and probably a little bit younger as well, we remember same-day eliminations on some of these big sulky side stakes races. That's kind of changed over the last couple of years, though, hasn't it? Even for races like the Hamiltonian and some of the other big races.
Yes, the Hamiltonian, up till this year, had been going with the eliminations and the final on the same day. I think that started in 2013. They went back to that format. They returned to the eliminations the week before the final this year. And that really was a benefit because, you know, the connections of Ramona Hill said that made the decision easier to enter the race, knowing that she wasn't going to have to race twice on the same day. So had they been racing the Lens and the final on the same day, we might not have had this story, which would have been a shame.
Ah, that's interesting. Do we have any idea where she might be headed next?
I'm not 100% sure. I think she is eligible to the Zweig Memorial, which is up at Vernon, and that would probably be her next start if they choose to go there.
Very good. Let's also go back to Saturday and talk a little bit about, again, one of the more prominent harness races of the year. The Cane Pace was also run on Hamiltonian Day, and we'll look now at the stretch run. It will be Tall Dark Stranger, the number 6 horse, getting it done here. And this kicks off the, if I'm correct, the pacing Triple Crown?
Oh, I'm sorry. You cut out there at the end. I didn't...
I was asking the Cane Pace, if I'm correct, it kicks off the pacing Triple Crown, correct?
Yes, it does. Yes, that is correct. And Tall Dark Stranger looked very sharp in that race. He's the Meadowlands Pace winner. He's put together a fantastic season. He was the Dan Patch Award winner for his division at 2. Come back very strong, and now, you know, got the Cane Pace under his belt.
So he's now 12-14, a pretty talented runner there. So he puts the Cane Pace on his resume, and what would be up next for him?
Up next for him is, I am not certain.
when is leg 2 of the pacing Triple Crown?
Leg 2 is the Messenger, and that would be on the 5th.
Very good. So that will be on the agenda at some point. But as opposed to the thoroughbreds, he could have one or two more races in between that, because they certainly show up a little bit more frequently, which is one of the things we like about the sulky side of the game. And Ken, one of the reasons I wanted to bring you on to do a little review of what's happened earlier this year and a little preview of what's coming up. Talk a little bit about the harness side of the game and how the whole COVID situation has maybe changed things up, and how there's been the reopening of the harness tracks around the country, just the way that the thoroughbreds have opened up over the past couple of months as well.
Well, it certainly has made an impact, as it has in all aspects of life. It didn't impact the stakes racing as dramatically, because a lot of those races are, you know, starting in June, July,
sure,
August. So from that standpoint, things, there were some races that were canceled. Some races have been rescheduled. For example, the North America Cup was going to be coming up later this month, when it's usually raced in June. And that's one of the big races for the three-year-old pacing. Most difficult for the people that race on a nightly basis and the overnight races, not having a source of income and waiting to see what was going to happen. But very fortunately, racing was able to return and return safely. And there's a lot of protocols to be followed to keep it safe and to keep it going. And everybody seems.
You froze up there for a second, Ken, but talk a little bit about the early part of the year. And obviously we saw two of the big performers in the Hamiltonian and the Kane Pace, but update us on some of the other horses we should be watching, given what we've seen in the early part of the year.
Well, it's been a very exciting first month or so of the stakes season, because we have Charton and the New Zealand bred, who was horse of the year last year. She came back this year. She has been racing very well. She won the Lady Liberty on Hamiltonian Day. We have Manchego and Atlanta, the 2018 Hamiltonian winner, and they've been racing very well. Manchego's already set one world record at Plain Ridge, winning the Spirit of Massachusetts. So they have a nice little rivalry going, but they're not just going to race against the mares. They're going to take on the boys a lot. And one of the big boys this year is Chimpanzee. He was runner-up for Trotter of the Year last year, lost out to his stablemate Green Shoe, but he has come back and looked fantastic. He is 5-for-5 this year. He won the Cashman Memorial on Hamiltonian Day. And the trotting side is just looking really competitive and a lot of star power, and very exciting.
And people can go to the USTA website and obviously hit on some of the top performers as well, find entries and results. You've got great information there. And I've just pulled up one of the events everybody certainly looks forward to, and this year scheduled towards the end of September, Little Brown Jug coming up.
Yes, Little Brown Jug coming up. That's still on the schedule. I believe, if I remember correctly, it will be raced without fans in attendance, which is, you know, a little bit unfortunate, but understandable under the circumstances. But always a big day, and one of the races that you circle that you want to win if you have a three-year-old pacer, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's again, as you say, no fans is kind of an unfortunate side of the game, but at least we can still play, we can still watch, we can still enjoy, and a lot of people did, obviously, this past weekend with the nice performance from Ramona Hill in the Hambo and Tall Dark Stranger in the Kane Pace. And certainly we appreciate the update on the harness side. As I say, I know we have a lot of sulky fans out in our audience, so I wanted to take the opportunity a few days after the Hambo to pull you in and talk a little bit about the harness side of things. We appreciate the visit, Ken, and we will check in again.
Thank you, Seth. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it. Ken Weingartner from the USTA, again, talking a little recap on the Hambo, the Kane Pace, and a little more on a sulky season that, as Ken said, a lot of stars have come back and have run very well. Last year's Horse of the Year, that's always fun when those types come back, and that one has run well, and it's just unfortunate we can't have folks be on track to watch some of these performances, but at least they're on track going, and we can watch from a distance. So that's certainly a bonus that we can kind of be thankful for, because we're doing exactly the same thing over here on the thoroughbred side. All right, I'm going to wrap it up for this edition of Racing Across America. We do thank Ken Weingartner for joining us. Thank also Tom Law from the Saratoga Special. And again, tip of the cap to Gary Contessa for putting together the Richard Migliori interview with our crack crew here as well, who do a great job every day. Mick Richards and Brian Dorenzo and Danny and Dino down in the studio down in Albany. Don't tip our cap to those guys enough who during the Saratoga meet, it's always a little extra work, all hands on board. So great job from them as well. I'm just trying to think here if I had anything else to toss out there. Mike went through the promos before. We are at Prime at Saratoga National on Friday. I'll have another bankroll there. But again, they've been doing some good business, and you have to have a reservation anyway to get in for their watch parties. So just check ahead and make sure there are Friday availabilities before you head up and join us. We would love to have you there, though, so do call ahead. And if there are opportunities, swing on by, because we'll be there with the bankroll on Friday. That should be a lot of fun. Bounty Bet comes up on Friday as well. Keep that in mind. There are some promotions down at the Racebook today. That's going to be a lot of fun. There's an online Pick 4 play tomorrow. You can check out the website and try to get on that team. Go to CapitalOTB.com. Click on the promotions link for more information there. All right, I'm going to wrap it up for this edition of Racing Across America as we kick off week number 5. We're at day 20, the halfway point on this Saratoga meet on a beautiful Wednesday morning that I think has all opportunities to turn into a gorgeous Saratoga afternoon as well. So enjoy the racing, cash some tickets. Don't forget, we'll be back here from our Clear Court set tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. for the handicapper support. See you then.
Watching Racing Across America with Seth Merrow. Racing Across America has been brought to you by CapitalOTBBet.com, the premier online wagering site in New York State. CapitalOTBBet.com. Sign up today. The Leah Auto Group. To search their inventory, schedule a service appointment, or find a dealership near you, visit LeahCars.com. Leah Cars for life. And the new Capital OTB mobile app. Wager anytime, anywhere. Download it free from the iTunes Store or Google Play.